Her body was discovered in a nearby wooded area.
She was stabbed 19 times and left for dead,
where two adults have been shot to death.
143 people have been murdered. Hundreds more have been shot.
She had been stabbed to death.
It was the bloodiest thing I think I've ever been to.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Dark and Deadly. We are your hosts. I'm Haley.
And I'm Gina.
Okay, so I just want to preface this case with a huge trigger warning before we get into it, because this case was very hard for me to get through, and I almost considered not even doing it at all. It's one I have not heard before. You just said that you've never heard of it before. So with that being said, trigger warning for sexual abuse, torture, and murder of a child. So.
Oh, no.
We have plenty of other episodes you can listen to that don't include such dark topics, so feel free to skip this episode if you need to, and we'll just see you here next week for hopefully a little lighter of an episode. I don't know what Gina has planned, but this is one of the tougher cases we've covered, so just prepare yourselves for that.
I hate these cases.
I know, I'm sorry. I almost had to stop because I've got sons and this involves a little boy, and it was very, very hard. But we're going to travel all the way to the land of kangaroos and giant spiders. And I want to apologize beforehand if I pronounce any city names wrong, because I'm going to do my best to make sure that I say them right, but please don't come for me if I butcher it. On the 4th of May, 1982, 13-year-old friends Peter Aston and Terry Ryan decided to skip school. Peter was often bullied for the way that he looked because he wore these big, thick glasses, but honestly, he was the cutest little kid. We'll post a video or a picture on our Instagram. He was so cute, and I'm not sure how old they were in the pictures we're going to post because they look a lot younger than 13, but at the same time, these kids are growing up a lot faster than they did back then. I feel like we all looked way younger at 13 than the kids do at 13 these days.
Have you seen some of these girls that they do a makeup so well?
Yeah, way better than I can.
You completely skipped way better than I can. And I sometimes wonder, and I'm not a parent, so I can't really talk, but I'm like, where is your parent? Because you look like you're 18 and you're 13 years old.
Which is so scary. What is going on? Because of how social media is these days and predators online,
yes,
and everything.
You don't know who they're talking. Oh, fully.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and then it's just kids don't need to be sexualized. Why are you trying to look 18?
Exactly.
You're not even in high school yet. I don't get it.
Yep. Anyway, because of the bullying, Peter and Terry would often skip school, and on this particular day, they decided they were going to go hitchhike all the way from Marsden to Melbourne, which is spelled like Melbourne, but it's actually pronounced Melbourne, just saying. So Peter really wanted to go see his brother who lived in Melbourne, so the plan was that Terry would accompany Peter all the way to the Gold Coast and then turn around and head back to Marsden. Now, from Marsden to Melbourne is about an 18-hour trip by car. So,
Australia is that big?
Yeah. And I'm thinking back of the days that I was skipping class to go to the zoo, which was risky. Yeah. Not traveling almost an entire day somewhere else. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, no. When we would skip school, we would stay at somebody's house and eat lunch for a little bit longer.
This kid was traveling farther than I ever have in my entire life in one day. It's crazy.
That's insane.
So the two boys meet up at a nearby lake at about 8:30 that morning, but they didn't end up leaving until around 10:30 for Kingston Railway Station. And they caught a train to Brisbane City. And while in Brisbane, they did a little afternoon shoplifting, normal 13-year-old stuff. They shoplifted... I'm joking, by the way. That's not normal. They shoplifted clothing and about 20 packs of cigarettes. Then they headed...
20?
20.
How do you shoplift 20 packs of cigarettes without somebody catching you?
I don't know. I'm unsure. Then they headed to Gold Coast Highway, where their plan was to hitchhike from there. So they came across a man parked off to the side of the road that looked like he was having some car problems. So he was looking underneath the hood, playing around with stuff under there. He looked to be probably in his late teens, so not much older than the boys. So they kind of felt comfortable to approach him. And then in the car was another man who looked to be in about his 30s. The boys walked up to the two men in the car and asked if maybe they could catch a ride to the Gold Coast with them. And the younger one was like, yeah, I just got the car fixed, so we could definitely give you a lift down there. He then proceeded to tell Terry to get in the back seat and told Peter to take the front passenger seat. Kind of odd that they had them take seats in different parts of the car. But the boys...
Well, and it's... I feel like it's odd to offer to drive somebody 18 hours.
Well, it wasn't 18 hours to the Gold Coast.
Oh, how long is it to the Gold Coast?
I want to say like three hours or so. Okay. So he was... Terry was going to hitch a ride. Right. Terry was going to hitch a ride with Peter just to the Gold Coast and then turn around and go back home. And then Peter was going to travel the rest of the 15 hour trip.
Okay. That makes sense.
So the boys jump in like they're told. And once they start heading off down the road, the older man who was sitting in the back seat next to Terry pulled out a double barrel shotgun and pointed at him and told him that if he moved, he was going to kill him. It didn't take long before they pulled the car off to the side of the road and handcuffed the boys, then got back on the road. And the men told the boys that they were police officers, and anytime the boys tried to speak or ask questions, they would hit them. I mean, both of these boys were living an absolute nightmare, first off, but for some reason, Peter was kind of their main target for the abuse right off the bat. While they were driving, for whatever reason, they just started punching on him and even hit him in the jaw with the barrel of the shotgun for no reason. And they ended up driving the two boys about 60 kilometers away, which translate to about 37 miles to us Americans who don't go by the metric system, to a town called Kingscliff. And this is about an hour and a half away from Marsden, where they had began their journey. So the two men knew this area pretty well and drove them down to a secluded beachy area and parked the car. They took Peter out of the car first and put thumb cuffs on his toes, which I don't know if you know what those are because I had never heard of them before. Basically, they're handcuffs, but they're for your thumbs.
What?
Yeah. So
why is that a thing?
They were originally used by detectives, I guess.
Is that like a gift?
What?
Is that like a gag gift?
No. So they actually gave them to detectives and positions like that where they didn't really have the ability to carry full-on handcuffs. So if detectives had to arrest somebody, they would use these because they were easier to conceal and carry with them because they're not have a full-on belt full of stuff.
Right. Okay. So if they're undercover, they have something that they can put somebody under arrest with.
And they don't use them nowadays, I don't believe. But they're the same principle. You put them on your thumbs and you can't really do anything. But he put them on Peter's toes so that he couldn't run away.
Gotcha.
And then they went back to get Terry from the car. As soon as they got Terry out, they kicked him in the groin with steel-toed boots, which we all know that is a very sensitive area for males. So Terry basically dropped to his knees and was trying to catch his breath. And he stayed there for a while just trying to work through the pain and was just laying there pretty much. And while Terry was down, the two men whose names are Robin Reed and Paul Luckman focused their attention back on Peter. So this is where the trigger warning is really going to kick in. If you want to skip ahead a few minutes or stop listening altogether, I get it. So what these poor boys went through was beyond horrific and disturbing, Peter especially. Robin and Paul proceeded to strip Peter down nude and gag him with his own clothing. They took turns stabbing him, beating him, sexually assaulting him, burned him with cigarettes. They hit him so hard with the gun that it actually broke into two pieces. They used a leather punch to punch holes into his ears. They slit his throat, stabbed him in the head, then used his blood to paint red rings around his eyes. And he was alive through all of this. They did not show him any mercy, to the point where, like, they were torturing him so much that he was close to death, but not dying. They then made Terry perform oral sex on Peter and eat his pubic hair that they had cut off. Peter was actually able to slide his toe cuffs off at one point and started to run away, but Paul, which was the younger one of the two, was able to catch up to him, unfortunately. And there was a second time that Peter was actually able to try and get away, but this time Robin got out a shovel from the car and started beating him over the head with it. Then the men forced Terry to hit his friend over the head with the shovel. And Terry was trying to do it as carefully as possible as to not hurt Peter very badly, but he also didn't want the men to get mad at him, so he listened to what they said but tried to also spare Peter from actually being hurt too badly. And at that point, Terry kind of starts thinking at this point, what can he do to survive? So he tries to make friends with these two despicable pieces of garbage, and he asks if he can help them. And at first they were hesitant and didn't know if they could fully trust him, but he was like, well, you know, I just beat my friend with a shovel, so what else do you need me to prove? And they handed him over the shovel and told him to start digging Peter's grave. And I'm just imagining what is going through Peter's head at this point. Like, is he thinking that Terry is doing this to save himself, or is he sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, my friend is literally digging my grave and doesn't care about what's happening to me? Because he's 13, so he's obviously probably not rationally thinking that Terry's trying, like, he's to survive.
Trying to save. No, I mean, you're correct that he's 13. He's not going to be thinking in, like, the way an adult is, which is he's trying to save himself. Why would he turn on me suddenly?
Right. Because as an adult, him, it's probably I would start swinging that shovel at those guys. But as a kid, I would absolutely start digging my friend's grave to try and
save my life. No, you're scared. Yeah. You don't know what's going on. You've just been tortured. You had to do horrible things to your friend. Mm-hmm. He probably doesn't look like he's going to survive.
Right.
I mean,
it's gut-wrenching.
Haley, that's so horrific.
Yeah.
I don't understand how people like that exist in the world. I don't understand how you can do that to another human being.
Me either, especially when it comes to children and, like, the look of fear in their eyes. Like, how do people do that? I don't get it. I don't get it.
I think that there's just something wrong. Like, something is missing in your brain.
There's no other explanation.
You have a screw loose. Because I just, yeah.
Yeah. So after the shallow grave for Peter was finished, they put him in there and they buried him alive. And the three got back in the car and started heading back to Brisbane. And along the way, they actually disposed of any of Peter's belongings at, like, a park they had stopped at, threw all of his stuff away, went into the bathroom, rinsed the blood off of them. And then Robin and Paul asked where Terry lived so that they could take him home. And he was in complete shock at this point and just spouted off his home address, which later in interviews, he was like, I could not even think of another place to tell them to drop me off at. Like, I just immediately told them my address and regretted it, but that's what I did. So
I'd be pretty traumatized at that point. Like, you're not thinking right.
Yeah. And in different circumstances, I think it would be safe to say that you probably would have them drop you off anywhere else other than your home. But I don't know. when you're in that situation, like there's no telling as to what you're going to do, you know?
No. And they're preteens, like they're children.
Yeah. So they did drop him off at his house. They shook his hand and told him if he told anybody what happened, they would come back and do the same thing to him. Terry, I gotta give it to him, was beyond brave because as soon as he got through the front door of his house, he ran straight to his mother's arms and told her absolutely everything. At this point, it's the next day in like the early, early morning, probably around 3 a.m. Terry's mother took him straight to the police station to make a report. And at first, the authorities were kind of iffy on his story. I mean, it's completely cruel what they put them through, Peter especially. So they were like, why would they kill him and not you? But they did drive him to King's Cliff so that he could show them where Peter was buried. And he kept taking them down the wrong turn to the beach. So they would get pull off to these different spots and he'd be like, oh, I'm sure it's this one. And then it ended up not being that way. And so the police after a couple times were like, are you even like telling the truth here? And he's like, no, I promise it happened here somewhere. We just have to like look for it. So eventually, after a few tries, they got down to the right spot. And once they did, the authorities were completely shocked at what they found. They were able to see in this bushy area a grave-size mound and a pool of blood that was still wet. So basically what had happened is he was bleeding so much, even being buried, that the pool of blood had surfaced up to the top of the sand, which is crazy.
That is an insane amount of blood.
Yeah.
So
there wasn't like a pool of blood there beforehand. He was buried and like the pool, like the blood had surfaced up to the top.
How long had it been between when he was buried and him being found, or like within a day?
Yes. Yeah. Within a day.
Good on Terry for saying something.
Right. I mean, he could have totally been too scared to say anything. And What a good friend. I mean, he had been through so much. And honestly, I don't think anyone would have really faulted him for not speaking up right away.
No, that's so traumatic.
Yeah. So near the grave, the police found a knife, a sock, and chewed up matches. I'm going to talk about what they found during Peter's autopsy. So again, trigger warning, if you have to skip forward, now's the time to do that as well. He had been stabbed more than 30 times, multiple lacerations on his head and body. His hair had been cut. He was covered in bruises from head to toe. He had a depressed skull fracture, more than likely from the shovel, which caused a brain bleed. He had holes and bruising on his ear from the leather punch, fractures to his vertebrae, a stab wound to the right of his throat, cigarette burns covered his chest, his scrotum had been crushed. In addition to the stab wounds, he had also had numerous lacerations across his body. Sand was found in his nose, trachea, and bronchial tract, which is how we know he was definitely buried alive. And after all the injuries he went through, his cause of death was ruled to be asphyxiation. So he literally, after all those injuries, basically just inhaled sand until it killed him.
Do you know how terrifying that is?
Yeah. Like, he wasn't even buried that deep. So if he would have had more strength or wasn't brutally tortured before that, he probably could have gotten out of that. But he was literally so close to death, he could not even get out of that shallow grave and just sat there and slowly suffocated on sand. Haley. How terrible.
His poor parents.
I know. They didn't even show pictures in court because of how awful they were. Like, I think withheld some details from the jury a little bit because there was women on the jury and they didn't know how well they would be able to handle it because of how awful it was.
That's so sad.
Yeah. So after some time, Terry was able to give authorities some good information to go off of as to who these two men were. He explained the men were driving a yellow Daihatsu, and he was able to describe what the men looked like. Robin and Paul were currently in Brisbane while this was happening, disposing of Peter's glasses and getting a bite to eat. Like, they didn't just brutally murder an innocent child. The park that they had disposed some of Peter's belongings actually had already had the trash picked up for the day. So Terry had told them to look there for evidence. When they went there, nothing was there. So authorities actually went to the landfill and sorted through 25,000 tons of garbage in order to find the items that they were looking for, which thankfully they did. But that's how dedicated they were, is they sifted through 25,000 tons of garbage.
That's insane. I feel like most detectives in America, no.
Right. They would be way too lazy to do that.
Lazy or just, have you been to a landfill? It is a disgusting, but there's much going on. And the one that we have here in Boise, they have trucks that come over and just sweep everything away. Like, yeah. You dump it, and then they have dump trucks that are coming through and moving in.
Right. So they put out a bolo with the men's descriptions and the vehicle, and the next day they get a call saying that they believe these two were soldiers at the Anagra Army Camp, and that they were 34-year-old Robin Reed and 17-year-old Paul Luckman. So the detectives on the case headed to the army camp to look for more on this lead. And what they found in their dorm was disturbing, to say the least. They found over 30 knives, scalpels, swords, books with photos of young men in bound positions, and other books on Satanism. And then they found a photo album full of hair samples, like trophies. And they would have like a little bag full of hair with a name and a description of what the hair is from, like such as like pubic hair or underarm hair. So they would have a name, and then underneath it would say like pubic or underarm.
So we're dealing with potentially either serial rapists or serial killers.
Precisely. And the sad thing is that we never find out if there were more victims.
What?
Yeah. So a few days after Peter's murder, Private Robert Ponzetti, a fellow soldier, was said to be missing. And he was said to be with Reed and Luckman in Ponzetti's car. And they didn't know if he was like helping them escape or if he was in on the crime or what the situation was. Shortly after they put out the bolo on the car's description, Robert Ponzetti actually showed up at the police department and told them that he was also abducted by the two men at knife point. And not only that, but they had admitted to him that they were responsible for Peter's murder. And this is the story that Robert gave to police. He said that early morning on May 6th, Reed and Luckman entered Ponzetti's room, and Reed was holding onto his stomach saying he didn't feel too well, and asked if Ponzetti would take him to the hospital off of the army base. He, of course, agreed and then got into the car, because Reed is like a corporal or something. He's pretty high ranked in the army there. So Robert...
Someone you should trust.
Right. So he was like, well, I have to listen to somebody who's an authority of me, so obviously I'll take them to the hospital. They get into his car, and almost as soon as the doors closed, Luckman pulled a knife on Ponzetti. And Reed then handcuffed Ponzetti and forced him out of the driver's seat and into the back. Luckman then drove them to the Daihatsu, where they gathered some of the belongings from the car. Then they got back into Robert's car, and this time with Reed driving, and this is when they told him about Peter's murder. They then dropped him off and told him not to say anything to anybody, unlike Terry did. So, of course, that's not what happened. He went straight to the police and told them everything. I mean, good on Terry and Robert for doing the right thing, because that took a tremendous amount of bravery for both of them to go straight to the cops. That same day, police got a call that someone had spotted Robert Ponzetti's car headed towards deep water. And among hearing this information, police set up a roadblock. And thankfully, everything went perfectly according to plan. Mm-hmm. And Robin Reed and Paul Luckman were arrested at this roadblock. Up until this, Robin Reed had a squeaky clean record and lived a seemingly normal life. He was born in the UK until his family settled in Queensland, Australia. He had a pretty normal childhood. He was described to be very, very intelligent with a very high IQ, but he was arrogant. So some narcissistic tendencies. And he tried to blame a lot of it on Luckman. But then at the end of the interview with the detective, he said something super disturbing that kind of further incriminated him. There was like a pen sitting on the desk. And he told the detective that he could easily kill him with that pen. So the detective asked how he would do it. And Reed said that he could stab it so far into his ears that it would hit his brain. Why?
What?
Yeah. He's a deeply disturbed individual, to say the least.
Flabbergasted.
So the second guy, Paul Luckman, who remember was just 17 years old, he didn't have the same fortunate upbringing as Reed had. He really didn't have a relationship with his parents. When he was 16, he started prostituting himself to other men in order to make money. He also enjoyed cross-dressing at a super young age. And he decided at 17 he wanted to join the army to possibly turn his life around. And just 3 months after joining the army, he was moved to the same base that Reed was in. And that's how these two monsters became friends and lovers. During Luckman's interview, he did kind of the same thing that Reed did, and that was blame the other person. And I think it's interesting because, like we were saying, like there has to be some sort of screw loose, right? But this is an instance where nature versus nurture comes in, where Reed had super normal childhood, not really anything triggering to make him be the type of person that he was. So that's where you could argue that it's 100% nature. In Reed's case. And then in Luckman's case, who didn't have a great upbringing, could 100% be nurture as to why he ended up the way that he did. So it's just interesting that these two got together and have those like opposite situations.
Opposite situations, but they're at the same point of sickness.
Right.
Evilness, whatever you want to call it.
Which is, yeah, which brings me to the next thing here that, so a fellow soldier came forward and said that he had actually gone out for drinks with Reed and Luckman. And somehow the conversation came up that Reed was interested in abduction. And I just want to know, how do these conversations come up with people? I do not understand. I don't understand.
Well, I guess for women, though... specifically, I mean, we talk about true crime, but it's more of like a case-by-case discussion, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like we hear about a case and then we're like, oh my gosh, did you hear about this one? Listen to how bad this is, and then we discuss it. But I feel like, and maybe this is, I don't know, sexist of me, that men don't or shouldn't do that same thing where you're like discussing brutal cases. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, no, I get it.
Not that men can't be into, like, true crime, but it just, it seems a bit odd.
Yeah.
That two guys in their early 20s and late teens are discussing kidnapping and then somehow segueing into, yeah, you know, I'm interested in kidnapping someone.
Yeah. I don't understand. So more specifically about Reed was that he told them that he wanted to abduct children and torture them and then sacrifice them on a stone altar. Like, why are you so comfortable bringing that up to a stranger? And that also begs the question, is this the first time that he's brought it up to somebody? Because don't you think that's kind of something that you should report to authorities?
I mean, yes, like But somebody might just pass it off as the dude being weird.
Yeah, and I mean, like, what can you do? It's hearsay at that point. Like, oh, I heard them talking about wanting to do this. Like, how do you prove that, you know? I don't know. It's just crazy. Anyway, Reed told this soldier that he wanted to inflict as much pain on them as possible that while they were still alive before brutally murdering them or burying them alive in a shallow grave. Sound pretty familiar? Then he proceeded to pull out a medical book just while they're having drinks, showing them exactly where he wanted to cut the victims in a way that it wouldn't kill them, but would inflict as much pain as possible. And after this, they all went to a movie together, as if that wasn't the most disgusting thing for somebody to tell you.
People who can act just nonchalant after seeing something, doing something.
Right? I'm like, I don't...
Like, there's no amount of rehabilitation for that person.
No.
I feel like.
No, definitely not.
Ever.
And Terry's brother in an interview actually said that he would, like, in America, this man would never see the light of day again. Like, he would 100% get the death penalty. But that's, I mean, we've seen it time and time again.
Does Australia have laws like Canada?
Yep, exactly. We've seen it time and time again with these international cases where they do not have strict punishment for people who deserve it.
Here's my thing. How on God's green earth do you not have serious punishment for crimes like this? Like, you're not protecting the people if you're just turning around and being like, we can rehabilitate them, they're fine, and then letting them loose. If they are acting this depraved, this mm-hmm. isn't something that you're going to be able to fix. No right. amount of medication is going to fix this. This is like... this is a fundamental issue with this person.
Yep.
I will never understand why Canada is that way and now Australia. I mean, I get that you don't want to keep people in prison forever. I understand that.
But there's some exceptions.
But there is exceptions for people who are this brutal. There has to be some kind of line that we're drawing in the sand where we're saying this is beyond depraved.
Mm-hmm.
They should not be allowed in society again because they are a danger to society. This isn't exactly. somebody who's probably going to like just randomly stop doing it after they've behaved the way, like, I'd be fascinated to see the person who is completely rehabilitated after committing the crimes that these two did.
Right.
I just don't believe it.
And you're about to be just pissed. Okay.
Lovely.
Reed and Luckman were charged with the murder of Peter Austin. They took the handcuffed men the very next day to the crime scene in Kingscliff. And Reed happily showed and told authorities exactly what had happened to Peter that day, as if they didn't just, you know, completely torture a little boy. He was smiling and excited to tell people what had happened. And the trial for Reed and Luckman began November 8th, 1982. Luckman pled not guilty, and Reed pled not guilty by reasons of insanity. The judge, during the trial, made the call to, like I said, not show any photos of Peter Austin's body because of how horrible they were. November 26, 1982, both of these monsters were found guilty and sentenced to life in prison for the murder. The judge described this as the worst homicide case he had ever seen in his years on the job. So, in 1989, Luckman actually received hormone treatments because a psychiatrist told him he was more of a woman than a man.
What?
In 1990, Luckman had a sex change to become a woman, and completely paid for by the state of Australia, got a sex change while in prison and changed their name to Nicole Louise Pierce. In October of 1993, her sentence was redetermined. And then in 1999, she was fully released from prison.
Okay, so why was her sentence redetermined? Like, what was it reevaluated because she had gone through the transition?
Yeah, she was a completely
and she was like now a woman, so they're reevaluating it because they're now looking at it through the lens of if a woman had committed this.
I don't know if it was so much that as if they considered her to be rehabilitated enough to re-enter society under this new identity.
But that doesn't make sense to me. It's still the same person who committed the same crime.
Yep. I have no words. Like, I'm so mad. I'm mad for Terry Ryan that he had no justice in this either, because it doesn't matter if he was returned back home. He was abducted and had to endure a horrific experience watching his friend go through what he did while also being hurt himself. He got no justice. And now this person
sexually abused his friend.
Yeah.
Not that he committed like the sexual abuse, but you know what I mean? He was sexually abused. They were both sexually abused. So, sorry. Is her name Nicole?
Yes.
So, Nicole, what was her original plea? Or what did she originally... She pled guilty, correct, to insanity?
Not guilty by reason.
Okay. She committed to a hospital?
Or to a prison? She served time in prison. Let me see.
And just had therapy while she was in prison.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't think a change, just because you go through, like, the sexual transition, that changes what you did. In any way.
Yep. And now Terry has to resends her to like a life.
Female prison. That's different. Whatever.
Yeah.
She should still be in prison.
I agree 100%. Because there's also like evidence that he at the time inflicted sometimes more brutal torture on Peter than Reed did. I think it was, I didn't put this part in here, but I did. On the documentary that I watched, I think it was him/Nicole now, had to go get like medical attention for their foot because of how hard they kicked Peter. Like it hurt their foot. Like he had to get medical attention for his foot. Can you imagine kicking somebody so hard that you like break your foot?
No,
a child.
She was wearing steel toe boots, right?
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense.
I feel really bad for Terry and I feel heartbroken for Peter's family. Oh, no. They are fully aware of how their son died. They know that he suffocated to death in his grave.
Mm-hmm.
That's not like that's not something you recover from. It's not like it was a car accident and it was quick and there was no pain.
Right.
I don't understand why these people are walking around society.
I don't either.
This wasn't an accident. They didn't accidentally kill him and torture Terry. They purposely did it.
And I can't even imagine the immense amount of survival guilt that Terry probably has dealt with his entire life.
Oh, I really hope he's gone to therapy and been able to somehow...
He's had a pretty rough life. I mean, when he was a kid and returned back to school, he was still incredibly bullied by people. He has been in and out of jail for minor offenses. He struggles really bad with alcoholism and still has major flashbacks from the event. Like he will never recover from that, no matter how much therapy you go through.
Mm-mm.
It's awful. I'm sure at some points in his life he wished he would have probably unfortunately died from it as well. Just like it would be such an overwhelming pain to know that you survived that and still dealing with the aftermath. Like I would probably sometimes wish that I wouldn't have survived to deal with that your whole life.
There's people who are able to cope with it. Like take Elizabeth Smart. She has somehow been able to
turn it into something forward. Good.
Yes, but I feel like she's the exception to the case because this isn't trauma like trauma I've experienced.
Right.
this is extremely violent, violent, evil trauma. Not that one person's trauma is worse than another person's trauma, but frick.
But, like, I mean, imagine meeting, like, evil firsthand, because there is no other way to describe that. Like, he full-on met, like, a demon. You know what I'm saying? Like, just evil in pure in human form. How do you recover from that? Because I would never be able to look at another person the same again. Like, knowing that he, that Reed especially, was, like, a normal person. How do you trust people? How do you trust
strangers ever?
Right. He was a person of authority in the army. Like, how do you trust anybody after that? You can't.
Well, and then, I mean, there has to be an element of Nicole got out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
And to feel like whatever sliver of justice you had received was taken away from you.
Exactly.
And I mean, listen, Nicole could be completely transformed. She could have had seen the light, understood exactly what it is she did wrong. Does that matter when you've done that and you've permanently damaged one life of somebody who has to continue to live and then taken away a 13-year-old's life?
Right. See, if I had done something like that, me being of, like, probably partially sane mind, I'm not all there sometimes, but I would be like, put me in there and throw away the key, because I don't deserve to have life outside of prison.
No, like, I just, that's so heartbreaking. That's so sad. I feel so sad for the families. Yep.
Oh, I know. It's awful. And Robin Reed is still serving his time in prison, but they do also have something like Canada. I think it's 24 years. I didn't write it down. After 24 years in your life sentence, you can apply for parole. In 1998,
I don't understand these.
I don't either. In 1998, he applied for redetermination of his sentence, like Nicole had as well, but he was resentenced to life in prison, thank God.
Okay.
He has applied for parole, but has been denied every single time. So multiple detectives that had dealt with Reed have all come forward and testified that they even fear for their own lives and safety of themselves and their family if he was ever released, because he would 100% reoffend. They truly believe that. So as of right now, hopefully he stays in there for the rest of his life. I hope he gets, like, a terrible brain-eating tumor and dies a horrible death. But as of right now, he's still behind bars.
I hate these cases. I
do this to you almost every time. I'm sorry. Sentencing.
I know. Yeah. I struggle with prison sentences. I think that there are people who are put away for way too long for, like, marijuana charges. I think that's ridiculous. But when we come up on murder and we're coming up on abuse, there's such a disparity, if that's the right word to use, between the sentences. You have people who commit, like, cold-blooded murder who get 6 years.
Right.
And then you have people who are like evil, straight evil, and are somehow released. And then you have people who, like, vehicular manslaughter, and they're sentenced to 20 years. Who are drinking, weren't under the influence, just like had an accident and accidentally killed somebody. So I just... I don't know how you even begin to reform that, but for people who are truly committing, like, the worst of the worst crimes, I don't understand how the government can justify releasing them back into society when we are fully aware of what they did and how evil and heinous it was, and why we're saying that we can somehow rehabilitate these people. Mm-hmm. There are some people that you just cannot. Ted Bundy, you can't.
Right.
And Gacy, you can't. Like, there are people in society who are just not, there's a screw loose, there's something wrong with their brains, with how they function, that should not be allowed to just walk around because we're trying to...
I get what you're saying, because like with Canada's laws, they want to, what we've talked about, rehabilitate people enough to go back out on the streets. But we also have to give respect for the victims and the victims' families. Like, they didn't get a chance to live because of this person. So no. Why are we giving them a second chance like to go out into society?
Yes, exactly. And it's not like I'm advocating for long sentences for every person that's ever committed murder. That's not what I'm saying. I am saying for the truly heinous ones where somebody was tortured, where somebody, like, where they were aware of what was happening to their body and felt pain
and took in so much enjoyment out of it.
Yes. And that, why are we doing that? I don't understand it. I don't understand it, Haley.
I don't either. And it's, I mean, it all should be case by case basis, I think. I mean, the judge in this case said that this is probably the worst thing that has ever happened in the state.
And I appreciate that they got full life sentences, but part of me is also like, those photos should have been shown so people could grasp exactly what happened.
Right.
While they are bad, I think it's so vitally important for the people who are making that decision for sentencing to fully grasp and understand what this person went through.
Right. Which it baffles me.
And maybe that's that trying to like released. Manipulate. Yes. I don't understand it. How long was she in prison for?
It wasn't very long. So she got released in 1999 and their trial was in 1982. So
17 years.
Yeah. Like 7 years after she got in there too, she started her hormone treatments and her sex change. So I don't know. It's just 17 years.
Resentence her to a women's prison.
Right.
No. If we like, she shouldn't be released. Sorry. Neither of them should be allowed to walk around play society again. Nope. Has she? I mean, she obviously hasn't reoffended.
Nope, she hasn't.
So then I struggle with that too, because if she hasn't reoffended, I don't know. You pray that these people that are in prison that have, you know, have done something wrong, they are getting some kind of like reality check on what it is they did, and so that they can understand and fully grasp that they have done harm.
Right.
And you want that because you want people to have a second chance, but there's some people where I'm just like, I don't know. Was Nicole the one that had the bad childhood, or was Nicole the one with the normal childhood?
She is the one with the bad childhood. She was raised by her stepmother and father. I guess her father like sexually assaulted her over and over again. She left home when she was 16. She was a prostitute. And then I guess in prison, she would do like sexual favors to other inmates in return for like cigarettes or drugs.
Do you think this is a case of now I'm blanking on their names, but the guy took advantage of her and manipulated her because obviously she had trauma and was lost and acting out sexually because of what had happened to her as a kid?
I don't know, because I
was just, she was easily manipulated into it.
I don't know. I was just going to say she's had violent tendencies in prison though too. And that's why it doesn't make sense to me as to why they let her out, because she's like thrown boiling water on fellow inmates. She was diagnosed as a psychopath and pedophile with a high risk of reoffending. So the fact that they let her out knowing that. Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Mm-hmm.
With that high probability of reoffending.
Yeah. Experts said that she had an easily manipulated personality that enjoyed violence.
Oh, Lord.
So Terry Ryan had said that And this is a quote from him. He might have had all the hormone treatments, but it's still the same brain, the same body, the same child killer. I mean, which it is. Like, you don't go through a sex change and all of them automatically you're a completely different person. You no, still have the same
way. You tendencies. Are still the same person.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... I hate cases like this. I hate cases like this.
Me too.
Family doesn't get justice. I mean, they got half justice, but this doesn't feel like justice.
No, it really
doesn't. Shame on the courts.
They failed Terry, especially, but like he got no justice. They weren't charged for his abduction or anything. Like, it's just sad.
Well, I'm sad now. Okay, well, thanks everyone for listening to another episode. If you made it all the way to the end. If you made it to the end, I'm not going to say congratulations, but go do something for yourself. Like, go drink a glass of wine.
Yeah, or watch a Disney movie.
Yes. Go for a walk. Talk to your loved ones. This wasn't fun.
No, it was not. Most definitely was not. I'm so sorry.
But I think it's important to also, but it's important to like talk about these cases so we can understand kind of what's happening with court systems and what's going on with sentencing.
Absolutely. Because there obviously needs to be some changes. And I mean, this happened back in the 80s, but has it really changed all that much? I don't think so. So it's good to have a discussion about it and to get those names of the victims out there so that we can do better. For future victims. So
how sad, future victims.
I know it's inevitable, which sucks, but
yeah,
thanks everybody for listening. You can find us on Instagram at Dark and Deadly Pod. We should have a poll up soon with our two case because we didn't do one last month. So
no, we'll post it on Monday when this episode drops.
Yes. And Happy New Year, everybody.
Hopefully Happy New Year.
2022 is a really good year because let me tell you, 2021 was not nice to me.
It really wasn't nice to me either.
I have heard that from a lot of people. Let us know if 2021 sucked. And Betty White sucked.
Dying? Are you kidding me?
That was last year's last F you, honestly. I was not happy.
It was. No. So sad. Okay, well, we're going to end this on a depressing note. Bye, everyone.
Yeah. Bye. See you next time.